Welcome to the E*TRADE Financial Second Quarter 2010 Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants have been placed in a listen-only mode. Following the formal remarks, we will open the call for Q&A. At that time, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. If your question has been answered, or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to turn the floor over to Susan Hickey from E*TRADE Financial. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for E*TRADE Financial Second Quarter 2010 Conference Call. Joining me today are Stephen Freiberg, E*TRADE's Chief Executive Officer, Bruce Nolop, our Chief Financial Officer, and other members of E*TRADE's management team. Before turning the call over to Steve, I'd like to remind everyone that during this conference call, the company will be sharing with you certain projections and other forward-looking statements regarding future events or its performance. E*TRADE Financial cautions you that certain factors, including risks and uncertainties referred to in the 10-Ks, 10-Qs, and other documents E*TRADE files with the Securities and Exchange Commission, could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those indicated by its projections or forward-looking statements. This call will present information as of July 22, 2010. Please note that E*TRADE Financial disclaims any duty to update any forward-looking statements made in this presentation. During this call, E*TRADE Financial may also discuss some non-GAAP financial measures in talking about its performance. These measures will be reconciled to GAAP either during the course of this call or in the company's press release, which can be found on its website at investor.etrade.com. This call is being recorded. Replay of this call will be available via phone, webcast, and podcast beginning today at approximately 7 p.m. Eastern Time. The call is being webcast live at investor.etrade.com. No other recordings or copies of this call are authorized or may be relied upon. And with that, I will now turn the call over to Steve Freiberg.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. To begin today's call, I will share a number of highlights from the recent quarter, and then I will turn the call over to Bruce to take you through the quarterly results. After I add a few closing thoughts, we will be happy to take your questions. The second quarter marked an important milestone for E*TRADE as we reported our first quarterly profit in 3 years. We reported net income of $35 million on net revenue of $534 million, reflecting terrific progress from a year ago when we reported a $143 million loss on net revenue of $621 million. Our results are a testament to the contributions of thousands of E*TRADE employees and to the loyalty of millions of E*TRADE customers. And they were certainly a nice welcome for me in my first full quarter as E*TRADE CEO. Our profitability in the quarter was driven by several items. First, we had solid performance in our brokerage business with strength in new assets and growth in a number of key metrics, including DARTs, new accounts, and margin receivables. Second, we benefited from the ongoing improvement in loan performance trends, resulting in a substantial decline in our loan loss provision. Third, we prudently managed our expenses. Finally, effective balance sheet strategies resulted in solid net interest income in an environment of declining interest rates, as well as opportunistic gains on loans and securities. With this quarter's results, we have now achieved three important milestones that support our return to sustainable profitability. First, our provisions for loan losses are now consistently below charge-offs, having reached that inflection point in the third quarter of 2009. Second, we are now generating organic bank regulatory capital, continuing the trend that began in the first quarter of this year. And third, this quarter marks our first profitable quarter since the second quarter of 2007. I am particularly pleased with the results of our work to reduce the balance sheet and mitigate risk. In addition to the decline related to prepayments and scheduled principal reductions, we securitized or sold $232 million in loans. And our continued effort to put back loans to sellers resulted in a $20 million legal settlement of loan claims, which contributed $15 million to the reduction in this quarter's provision and charge-offs. These actions, supported by improving delinquency trends, drove a meaningful reduction in balance sheet risk. While we are proud of our results, we know there is much work ahead to ensure we sustain and build on our momentum. We are gratified, though, that our financial progress provides us with increased flexibility to invest in the products, services, and technologies that will enhance our customer franchise to better realize growth opportunities that should drive shareholder value. During the second quarter, I spent time with employees in a series of town hall events and in smaller meetings with our management teams. I was energized by their engagement and their commitment to enhancing the customer experience through innovation and service. We have recently demonstrated this commitment in a number of areas, including the April launch of E-Trade Mobile Pro for iPad, continuing our leadership in the rapidly growing mobile space, the release of Open Application Programming Interface, or API, allowing third-party vendors and independent software developers to interface seamlessly with our investing platform, growth in our relationship management team to enhance the customer sales and service experience, and the elimination of our remaining account service fees to support our transparent pricing philosophy. This helped drive a 230 basis point sequential improvement in our customer attrition rate from 15% to 13% as we move closer to our objective of 10%. When we spoke last quarter, I was just a few weeks in with E-Trade, but already optimistic about the opportunity. Since then, my initial optimism has been reinforced. I have been very encouraged with the caliber of employees throughout E-Trade. They have been through a challenging period, but they continue to innovate, they are engaged, and most importantly, they have focused on winning. In addition, our financial progress, as I said, provides us with increased flexibility not only to reinvest in the business, but also to develop the appropriate plans to enhance shareholder value. I look forward to our ongoing dialogue as we build on our momentum. With that, I will turn the call over to Bruce to take you through our results for the quarter.
Thank you, Steve. Clearly, we are extremely pleased with our quarterly performance, which was supported by strength in our brokerage business, positive trends in our loan portfolio, and effective balance sheet management. We reported net income of $35 million, or 12 cents per share during the second quarter, which compares with a net loss of $48 million, or 25 cents per share in the prior quarter, and a loss of $143 million, or $2.16 per share in the second quarter of 2009. During the quarter, we generated $534 million of net revenue, a decline of $3 million from the prior quarter, and down $87 million, or 14% from the same quarter a year ago. Our revenue this quarter included net interest income of $302 million, which was down $18 million compared with last quarter. This 6% sequential decline reflected a $1.4 billion decline in average interest-earning assets to $41 billion and a 7 basis point decline in net interest spread to 2.89%. This reflects our strategy of maintaining a relatively consistent net interest spread despite an environment of declining interest rates. Commissions, fees and service charges, principal transactions and other revenue in the second quarter were $195 million, and this was essentially flat compared with the prior quarter, as an increase in DARTs was offset by a 33-cent decline in average commission per trade, from $11.38 to $11.05. This decline reflected the pricing changes that we implemented earlier this year, as well as customer mix. We again experienced increased principal transactions in our market making business, which we see as a continued growth opportunity. This business generated $29 million in revenue, which represents an increase of 10% from the prior quarter and 26% from the prior year. Our revenue this quarter also included $37 million of net gains on loans and securities, including a net impairment of $12 million, as we managed our investment portfolio to limit our risk and realize gains due to favorable market conditions. Our total operating expense for the second quarter declined 7%, or $20 million from the prior quarter, to $276 million. This included lower compensation, advertising, and restructuring costs. Our operating expense also declined by 16% from the second quarter of 2009 and by 10% if we exclude the one-time FDIC assessment of $22 million in last year's expenses. We are pleased with this performance, which reflects our ongoing focus on expense management. DARTs for our U.S. operations were 170,000 during the second quarter, up 10% from the prior quarter, but down 16% compared with the second quarter of 2009, which was a period of significant market volatility. Net new brokerage accounts were 18,000, representing a marked improvement from last quarter's results when we added 2,000 accounts. Moreover, brokerage accounts were up by 21,000, if not for the reduction of 3,000 cross-border accounts in connection with our European restructuring. Net new asset flows into our U.S. brokerage business were a positive $2.1 billion during the quarter and now total $4.3 billion year-to-date. Brokerage customer cash declined by $1.1 billion to $20.7 billion, while customers were net buyers of $3.4 billion in securities. Bank customer cash declined by $1.2 billion. Customer margin receivables in the U.S. grew by 26% during the quarter and ended at $4.8 billion. This represented a 60% increase from a year ago. As Steve highlighted earlier, we were pleased with the performance in our loan portfolio. The portfolio contracted by $1.2 billion during the quarter, including $232 million in loan securitizations or sales, and $746 million related to loan prepayments or scheduled principal reductions. Our loan loss provision declined from $268 million in the first quarter to $166 million in the second quarter. This is the seventh consecutive quarterly decline in the provision, which is now 68% below its peak of $518 million in the third quarter of 2008. Equally important, loan charge-offs declined from $288 million in the first quarter to $225 million in the second quarter. This is the fourth consecutive quarterly decline, and charge-offs are now 42% below their peak of $386 million in the second quarter of 2009. The decline in the loan loss provision and charge-offs this quarter included the benefit of a legal settlement on loan claims as we continue to look for opportunities to put back loans to sellers. The $20 million settlement contributed $15 million to the declines during the second quarter, and we expect the remaining $5 million to reduce our provision and charge-offs in the third and fourth quarters. The allowance for loan losses ended the quarter at $1.1 billion, down $59 million from the prior quarter, and remains at 6% of gross loans receivable. The improvement in our loan loss provision and loan charge-offs was driven primarily by our improving delinquency trends. Total special mention delinquencies declined by 14%, with a decline in the 1-4 family portfolio of 17% and a decline in the home equity portfolio of 8%. Total special mention delinquencies are now down 36% from their peak in the fourth quarter of 2008. Overall, we were extremely pleased with the improved credit performance and expect that credit costs will continue to decline. However, because the timing and magnitude of the improvement is affected by many factors, we anticipate variability in any one quarter while continuing to see a downward trend over the long term. We are pleased that the bank generated capital again this quarter. The bank generated $61 million in regulatory risk-based capital during the quarter, bringing the year-to-date total to $108 million. Our bank capital ratios continue to be substantially in excess of regulatory well-capitalized thresholds, As of June 30, the Tier 1 capital ratio was 7.27% to total adjusted assets and 13.39% to risk-weighted assets. We ended the quarter with $1 billion of risk-based total capital in excess of the level that our regulators define as well-capitalized. We also are very pleased to report that we generated substantial capital on a consolidated basis during the quarter. We increased consolidated Tier 1 capital from $1.1 to $1.5 billion, and we increased our tangible common equity from $1.7 to $2.1 billion. We ended the quarter with $481 million in corporate cash. This is an increase of approximately $63 million from the prior quarter and included a $100 million refund on the tax loss carryback legislation, a $25 million dividend from the bank, and a $58 million cash payment of the May coupon on our spring and lien notes. To summarize, we were very pleased with our performance in the quarter and look forward to building on our momentum. And with that, I will turn the call back to Steve for closing remarks.
Thank you, Bruce. Before opening the call for questions, let me share a few additional comments. First, I would like to comment on the financial regulatory reform legislation that was signed into law yesterday. While this legislation is generally considered to be comprehensive for the financial service industry as a whole, we believe the majority of the changes will have no material impact on our business. The implementation of holding company capital requirements, however, is relevant to us, as the parent company is not currently subject to capital requirements. With that said, we fully expect that our holding company capital ratios will exceed the well-capitalized minimums well in advance of the requirement. Our confidence in our ability to meet these requirements is reinforced by a few items. First, our trajectory towards sustainable profitability, as demonstrated in our second quarter results. Second, anticipated additional conversions of our convertible debt. And third, the utilization of our deferred tax asset as we deliver profitable results. Therefore, I want to emphasize that at this time, we are quite comfortable in our ability to meet these future holding company capital requirements, and we have no plans to raise additional capital as a result of the financial regulatory reform. Finally, we had a very productive quarter on all fronts. With organic capital generation, improving trends in the loan portfolio, and now a return to profitability, we are on the right track to enhance shareholder value, and I am fully committed to this most important objective. I look forward to the coming months as we develop and execute plans for E-Trade's next stage of growth, and I look forward to engaging with you on our progress with respect to the company's strategy for delivering shareholder value. With that, operator, we are ready to take questions.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Roger Freeman of Barclays Capital.
Hi, good evening. The first question is Steve, now that you've been on the job for a quarter, as you think about sort of longer term for the organization, what role do you think a bank has within the E-Trade sort of product set, the value to customers, products that you want a bank to sell?
Yeah, that's a relevant question. First and foremost, the role the bank, has played in the institution has been important. I know you're more than familiar, we have approximately $30 billion of customer deposits, and those deposits are both clearly important to our customers, being an FDIC-insured institution, but as important, those are largely, and today, approximately 70% of those deposits do in fact come from our brokerage customers. They are very low cost, very stable, and very profitable deposits for E-Trade. And so that alone really is a compelling reason to have the financial institution, the bank. I would expect that that will continue over the long term. In addition to that, we're clearly looking at the bank options and opportunities, but it's a bit premature to go anything that is specific. But again, to just emphasize, very large deposit base, very stable, largely coming from our brokerage clients, very profitable, very important.
Okay, that's helpful. Then two other questions. One macro around the mortgage portfolio, one a little more granular. I mean, I guess, you know, looking this quarter again and in prior quarters, you've been, you know, selling off bits and pieces of the portfolio as opportunities arise. I mean, I guess looking at the portfolio as a whole at this point, how wide of a gap do you think there is? You know, I imagine you look at this fairly regularly between what you think the value on a, you know, a mark-to-market basis would be versus what you've accrued to. I mean, I assume that gap continues to shrink.
I do think you answered the question that directionally, you know, the differential between, you know, book and market is in fact improving. That said, I don't really have a, you know, a specific valuation or number. As you're probably aware, that the portfolio really is, you know, designated as a portfolio that we will hold, a hold-to-maturity portfolio, so that our flexibility around the portfolio is, relatively speaking, extremely limited. You know, all in all, it's a portfolio that we continue to be aggressive in the management of. I think you've seen in the results this quarter in particular, we shrunk the portfolio by $1.2 billion, a combination of kind of our normal processes, plus the ability to securitize and sell approximately $230 million of assets. And just to make a point, we sold it actually at a profit, so it went out at above par, which we thought was actually a terrific thing to occur, particularly in this environment. So, you know, we'll continue to manage the portfolio, particularly the legacy book, down. But at the same time, I think it would be unrealistic to make any assumption that there would be, you know, one large solution to the challenge portfolio.
By the way, on that point, if you know, given that you're selling loans above par, which I assume is just a function of the low rate environment, the longer rates stay low, that those opportunities are more prevalent for you, right?
I would say that the rate environment's important, but again, emphasizing that the portfolio is largely a held-to-maturity portfolio. And in addition to that, you know, the risk is probably, or the perceived or real risk, probably the most important element here, more so even than the rate environment.
Okay. And then just one sort of granular question here. If when I'm looking at your the stats you're giving on the modifications, the TDRs, when you do that, where typically in the sort of delinquency cycle is that? Like, can I roughly assume that, you know, those are balances that are coming in from the 180-day plus, or is it, you know, kind of spread out all over? And I mean, assuming when you do that, right, it does come out of your portfolio, your loan portfolio delinquency statistics, right, and becomes a current loan then again.
Yeah, this is Bob Burton. The loans do come out of generally the range between 90 and 180 days for the most part. Generally, the first mortgage loans are modified a little bit later in the process. But we found that we've had good success modifying product even if it's up to the 180-day level. And in some cases, have even modified loans beyond 180 days. The performance of that portfolio, the modified portfolio, has been very good. We think we're getting good economic lift, and we're going to continue to work that as hard as we can.
And if you do a scheduled principal reduction as part of a modification, then do you take a gain on that to the extent that the reduction is less than what you had basically accrued the loan for on a loss basis?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Roger. Can you rephrase?
If you cut someone's principal when you modify in a loan mod, do you typically take a gain on that as a result because you've already taken charges against that loan that are in excess of what you're agreeing to lower the principal to?
Well, first of all, we do very, very few principal reductions. But if we did that, it would actually create a loss on the transaction since we'd write that principal reduction down.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Rich Repetto of Sandler O'Neill.
Good evening, guys. Hello?
Hi, Rich.
Yeah, I guess the first question, Steve, is on expenses. You know, the expenses came down nicely. You know, demonstrated good expense discipline. I understand the advertising. Could you talk a little bit about the comp coming down when revenues were, you know, pretty just down slightly quarter to quarter?
Yeah, I mean, from the standpoint of compensation, it really had several drivers, Rich. One that really, you know, in many cases preceded my arrival here on the comp side, a fair amount of restructuring on the, particularly on the local international businesses, as well as restructuring in our domestic business. And what we're seeing is the benefit of that now flowing through the P&L. So, A, it's sustainable. In fact, the comp lines, from the standpoint of looking out over time, should continue to basically follow, I think, a reasonably good trend. And that's just, again, a testament to getting prioritization into the business, as well as to the hard work that E-Trade employees have accomplished. It really has three dimensions to it. One is comp, as you pointed out. The second is, on a sequential basis, the marketing costs have come down as well. But if you look on a year-on-year basis, we've continued to reinvest at a higher rate in the franchise, meaning marketing costs are actually higher by about 15% on a year-on-year basis. And then finally, particularly on a sequential basis, the restructuring costs in the second quarter were better than what we basically had in the first quarter. That really makes up, I think, the combination. But just to reemphasize, you know, part of my role is to continue to put a fair amount of pressure on the expense line, but at the same time, not only take expenses where appropriate lower, but redirect them both into marketing and sales, as well as product and technology, if we can grow the franchise.
Very helpful. Next question is on the credit and reserve. I know, Bruce, you talked a little bit. I thought you made mention of, you know, credit. You expected longer term trending down, but you know quarter to quarter, you know, some variance. I'm looking at the reserves and how you built. Well, for example, on 1-4 family, the provision equal to charge offs. And you're carrying an allowance that's well above what you would take as an annual run rate there. You know, if you just take $70 million, it'd be $280. So I guess the question, and then on home equity, you know, it looks like you play a little catch-up with the modification and release reserves. So my question is, you know, are you expecting 1-4 family to deteriorate a bit? Is that why you're carrying such a big allowance going forward? And what type of expectation, you know, are we caught up on the modifications for home equity?
Yeah, I would say that the factors that go into the provision are really quite a few, but just directionally, the first lien portfolio is further behind the mortgage or the home equity portfolio in terms of its vintages and seasoning and modification. So, in a sense, it's still at the point where it hasn't fully crossed the inflection where provision will start being lower than charge-offs, but we expect that to occur in the future. And with respect to home equity, it has achieved that inflection point, and modifications are being helpful.
Just one other point. This is Paul Brand. I just want to remind you, Rich, that if you're looking at the total allowance, recall that that's both the general allowance plus the allowance for the TDRs. And the TDR allowance is not an expectation of losses over the 12-month period. It's an expectation of loss over the life of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
So the total allowance is not, you can't translate that into a 12-month forward-looking loss estimate.
Got it. Okay. Last question. In looking at the bank average, the interest earning, the average balance sheet at the bank, you know, a couple of the asset classes went up, margin loan, that's great, that's high margin. But you added a little bit of held to maturity securities, one of the few categories that actually went up as the overall balance sheet went down. Schwab did the same thing at the same yield, the 370-plus yield. So I guess the question is, are there opportunities at a certain duration? And the only other follow-up is, on the 232 that you did sell of loans, you know, what type of loans were they?
Yeah, sure. This is Bruce, and we established the held-to-maturity portfolio for the first time this quarter, so it was something that we instituted. And we added about $800 million of securities in the portfolio this quarter. We expect to grow it to be roughly $2 to $3 billion over the next few quarters, and that's where it'll hold. And we did that strategically because we thought it would be a good match with the customer deposit base that's funding them. So that's the strategy, and we can talk about the individual securities that go in there. But in general, they are agency securities, similar of risk characteristics as the rest of the portfolio. With respect to the securitization and sales of securities, the $232 million, those were conforming securities that we were able to sell and securitize with the Fannie Mae agency. So that was almost a one-off type set of transactions.
Okay. Congrats, guys. Nice job this quarter.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from Daniel Harris of Goldman Sachs.
Hi, good evening, guys. I was wondering if you could comment a little bit on the rate per trade. Obviously, you guys made the change in pricing earlier this year. Came down a little bit this quarter. Is this, you know, essentially a good rate, or did you see, you know, higher level of certain type of asset trading driven by the volatility in the quarter?
This is Bruce again. In terms of the impact of the pricing change, the overall impact was about 50 cents to the average commission per trade for the quarter, and sequentially that was a 14 cent change from the first quarter to the second quarter. So the remaining 19 cents of decline was due to customer mix, and the main factor there was you had a smaller percentage of so-called Main Street investors who would pay a higher commission. But and we also had, just to comment, some offsetting positive mix. For example, options were a good mix this quarter.
But let me just, Steve, just, you know, finish up on the commentary that, you know, what we talked about, you know, for the first quarter when pricing really was kind of implemented, meaning the cost of the business, is actually coming in almost precisely on our expectations. So it's also in line with what we expected when we went through the process of both developing both the analytics as well as the strategy prior to execution. So it's actually executing to expectations.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. Shifting over to the market making side, you know, this is an area that, you know, has continued to show some really nice growth year over year. And, you know, Knight Capital also noted some pretty positive trends. You know, how should we be thinking about the strength there in the quarter, you know, around the flash crash and the volatility there, which probably drove some higher margin trading versus, you know, what we should expect going forward? Certainly it seems like volumes were elevated in the quarter, but was the revenue capture of the margin in that business also elevated?
You're talking about the market making, the principal transactions. That was not really a function of the flash crash. And in fact, it can be attributed very much to the success in bringing in more external customers. And we think that's one of the benefits by the strengthening capital structure and financial condition of E-Trade is it makes us a much more viable and strong competitor in that market. So we see continued growth in that. And again, not related to any of the flash crash issues.
Okay. And then just lastly from me, you know, a trend we're seeing also, margin debt continues to move higher year over year across most of the brokers. You guys obviously are benefiting from that too. You know, any sensitivity that clients have to a higher margin rate, or how are you thinking about the margin rate here, you know, now the assets are moving nicely higher over the last 12 months?
This is Bruce, and I would just say that clearly margin is extremely important to our business. We were very pleased that the average margin balance for us grew by 15% this quarter, which is really helpful to our results. And in terms of the sensitivity of the rate, that is something that we monitor very carefully, and we want to make sure that we're always competitive. And it's something that we discuss with particularly our major customers to make sure that we're giving them a good value proposition.
Let me just add one other commentary. I think it's important. Even though we grew the margin balances sequentially approximately 25%, essentially our margin spreads actually, or our yield and spread actually improved throughout the period. So I think it just adds kind of a factual element to you know, to the outcome. So not only do we have good growth, but we did not compromise either price or spread in order to grow.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Your next question comes from Matt Snowing of FBR Capital Markets.
Yeah, good evening. I guess my question regards the $1 billion of excess capital at the bank. I guess it seems that, you know, credit has clearly turned the corner. The bank is generating organic capital. So at what point do the regulators allow you to upstream more of that capital to the holding company to perhaps pay down debt?
That's something we just can't comment on, Bruce. But I think it is fair to say that now that the bank is generating capital, and as you noted, we already have excess, that's clearly a topic that we'll be discussing with the regulators as we go forward.
All right, fair enough. Follow-up question on funding. You still have about $9 billion of repo and home loan bank funding. And if I recall, a lot of that was hedged, so you couldn't necessarily let that roll off. But now that you're potentially taking gains, can you take those gains and break those hedges?
The answer is we could, but theoretically, the loss though on the unwinding of the hedges would be so significant, and from our analysis, that it would not make sense to do at this point. It perhaps will make sense in the future, but not now.
Okay, and how long is that funding? What's the duration of that funding?
The home loan bank loans are 3 to 7 years. They'll be rolling off. And in terms of the repo and the hedge accounting related to them, they roll off over 10 years.
10. Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Mike Vinciquetta of BMO Capital Markets.
Thanks. Just to follow up on Dan's question on the commission rate, I had a note from last quarter that you guys, the commission rate actually had stayed stronger because there was more stock plan administration selling. You get a higher commission rate there. And this quarter, it actually held up pretty well. Did you continue to see more than typical activity out of that particular segment?
We saw good activity, but sequentially it would be down, and that's because you tend to have more exercises of particularly restricted stock in the first quarter. And as well as options. So it's seasonality in that business. But overall, that business is performing very well for us, and it's a real strong point for the company.
Okay, so at this point, no reason to expect any major changes on the commission. I know you get a mix shift, but in the commission rate, nothing to really flow through into the third quarter to know about?
No.
Okay. Want to ask on the loan securitization, just to make sure I understand the accounting there. You said you sold agency securities. Is there any sort of residual on that, or is the residual already with your clearing partner anyway who takes care of the servicing for you? Your servicing partner who takes care of that for you.
No, there's no residual involved in that.
So you sold $232 million in loans, and you actually got a small gain, so that was a cash transaction essentially to you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And just to tell you the gain, it was a 6 million gain.
Okay. And then just last thing. Go ahead, sir.
Just to be clear, we took back the security.
I see. Gotcha. Okay. Then just two line items, FDIC insurance premiums and servicing costs. I would expect those over time to be declining as the portfolio comes down and as your deposits run off at the bank. Is that fair, Bruce? Is there something specific to this quarter why those we haven't seen any real improvement in those particular line items?
The two things are, first on the servicing, that will decline over time. But there are a few expenses related to REO that go through that as well, and so it's not just a straight calculation. But directionally, you're correct that it should go down proportionally with the decline in the portfolio being serviced. And with respect to FDIC insurance, there is a mix issue. You have higher fees on brokerage cash than on bank cash for the deposit, but again, directionally, they should be relatively constant with the deposit base. But again, we don't see a big change going forward in the deposit base. Most of the decline is in the bank has already occurred.
Perfect. Okay, thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Howard Chen of Credit Suisse.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Congratulations on the turn to profitability.
Thank you.
The first question I had, a follow-up on the non-advertising operating expense step-down. What's the timing of those restructuring programs you mentioned, Steve? I guess I'm just trying to gauge how much of an incremental step-down we should anticipate in the next quarter, all else being equal.
Yeah, we don't provide
you know, specifically on that front. So, you know, I'll turn to Bruce. Okay. So I really can't give you a precise answer on that, other than to say that now through the remaining two quarters in the year, those numbers basically should be really, really fully reflective of that past restructuring.
Okay. Thanks. And then switching topics, if I thought about just this as a starting point and sustaining and growing profitability for the company from here, I guess one key in our minds is what's the ultimate size and mix of the balance sheet. You know, Steve, hoping to get any updated thoughts you have on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, as you would expect, it's a bit premature on that front to give you a specific number, you know, where this will become optimal. So I would say over the next, probably over the next several quarters, we'll have a much better sense of really the size of the balance sheet and where we find the right balance between what we deploy as a balance sheet, income, and returns. But that's what we're working on as we speak. What I can say, though, is particularly as what you've seen in the past, that we're continuing basically, you know, to manage as we had been managing, to reduce as substantial as we can, as quickly as we can, the legacy asset book.
Oh, okay, thanks. And then just you're freeing up regulatory capital. It doesn't sound like you're that concerned about, you know, reg reform. Just remind us of any, you know, target bank and parent company capital ratios that you're sort of aspiring to.
I can tell you what, at, you know, at the parent level, you know, from the standpoint of target, on a regulatory basis, you know, total capital to risk weighted would be for 10%. Tier 1 capital total adjusted 5, Tier 1 capital to risk weighted would be 6, and those would be considered by our regulators to be a well-capitalized institution. And so those are sort of the thresholds that we have in mind at the holding company. And from the standpoint of the bank, I don't know, Bruce, if, you know, we're as we said, we're well ahead of the statutory requirements.
Yeah, and we haven't at this point established any targets for the parent above what's been published as the official threshold. But for the bank, what we've said is that even though the well-capitalized threshold is 5% on Tier 1 capital to total assets, that we're targeting 6%. And with respect to risk-based capital, we've said we wanted to be in excess of the 10% threshold by at least $500 million. So if you think about it, we have $1 billion of excess capital now, and of that, $500 is above what we target internally.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful, Bruce. And just a quick numbers cleanup, what was the end-of-period share count?
In terms of the actual shares outstanding, it would be 210 million. And in terms of the fully diluted, it would be 290 approximately. And we're seeing if we can get any more specific than that.
What did you say? 220.4 is the actual outstanding at end of period.
Oh, I'm sorry, 220. I'm sorry, 220.
And fully diluted, you have it there?
290.
Okay, so 220 and 290.
Great, thanks so much, and congrats again.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Michael Carrier of Deutsche Bank.
Thanks, guys. First question, just on the balance sheet, the movement in the segregated cash, just wanted to figure out what that was due to. And then just the comment that you had of, you know, increasing the balance of the held to maturity, just based on that shift, you know, what you're seeing, just any, you know, comments on sensitivity to interest rates or NIM outlook?
Sure. First of all, on the segregated cash, this is actually a good story. It's got two components. First is the growth in our margin balances. That set of receivables is financed out of the segregated cash. So the fact that we grew our margin book by about $1 billion during the quarter, that reduces your segregated cash. And secondly, we were able to move $1 billion from segregated cash into our sweep deposits. And what that does is give us much more flexibility as to how we can invest it of the amount that's in excess of margin receivables. So that's why you saw the decline in both cases from our standpoint, really positive movement. And in terms of the net interest spread, just to comment, you know, overall, rather than on the held to maturity portfolio, is to just we think that we're going to be able to maintain the spread approximately where it is now, and are targeting around a 300 basis point spread for the next few quarters.
Yeah, I mean, just put absolute context to it. You know, we reported in the quarter 289 basis points, down 7 from the prior quarter, as we held more cash through the quarter on average, but invested basically above those averages by the end of the quarter. And to Bruce's point, our expectation is that you know, we can target and maintain over the coming quarters, minus about a 300 basis point spread, so a little bit better than where we were in the second quarter, as we deploy basically or better utilize the cash balances in the enterprise.
Okay, and then just a follow up. You know, I think a lot of banks, you know, you're obviously seeing the benefit, you know, from either reserve releases or improving credit. And I think, you know, what you try to get your arms around is, if you look at, like, the top-line growth, you know, in an environment where DARTs were up, margin balances were up, you know, you still had, you know, pretty much, like, flat, you know, revenues ex the provision. So I guess, you know, as the balance sheet shrinks, and I'm trying to just, you know, I know you can't gauge exactly where that's going, but if you look at brokerage cash or cash held by brokerage customers, it's $20 billion. That would be like the online brokerage business. So maybe it's $20 to $30 billion. I'm just trying to understand, you know, like, what's the offset? Meaning, where are there areas, you know, to grow the business? So as you're constantly shrinking the balance sheet, you know, there's still, you know, opportunities to grow, you know, the earnings.
Yeah, let me put, you know, perspective to it. If you think about, you know, E-Trade or the industry, you know, first and foremost, you know, the trading business, as you, I think you made a point on DARTs, has its own inherent volatility. Although if you look over long trends, you know, we expect that business, you know, broadly as an industry, may not be specific to E-Trade, probably grows at 5 to 7% a year, obviously with a lot of volatility in between. I think secondarily, particularly for E-Trade, we have a longer term opportunity to better serve and therefore better translate into economic benefit for E-Trade, more of the investor population, which is somewhat distinct from the trading population. We have a large embedded base of those folks, and we've begun over the last year to provide, build, develop more product and service that would provide the relevant level of value prop to those folks, although we still have a lot of opportunity ahead of us there. So it's an area of opportunity. I think thirdly, I think to your point, you know, the bank, which has been a source of both kind of economic profit on the deposit side, you know, clearly the downside of that is a lot of that historically was invested in assets that never did turn out to perform the way we had expected. But over time, you know, as that normalizes, you know, the bank, whether it invests basically in securities or any other asset, should be a very profitable enterprise for this entity. And then finally, and I think Bruce covered it in peace, we have some terrific secondary, not second-tier businesses, but secondary businesses, particularly in market making, particularly in corporate services. We provide both options and restricted stock plans to a number of companies. It's extremely important to us because a third of our new customers come through there. We have plenty of options to grow. We just have to basically get our house fully in order, which is really what we've been accomplishing over the last, I think, several years, really culminating in a very good quarter this time around. But we have, I think, many options, many levers to grow the firm. In my first 100 days or so here, what I've basically tried to do is to understand the industry, understand E-Trade, and then begin to start to synthesize these into what the right set of priorities would be so that we can actually grow the top line as well as benefit from, you know, what you've seen on the bottom line. But the goal is to basically have the concert play all the instruments top and bottom so we kind of play it out.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks a lot.
Next question comes from Brian Bedell of ISI Group.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Just following on real quick on the balance sheet, just for example, if you are reducing the loan side by about, let's say, $1 billion a quarter, and let's say over the next 8 quarters it's, you know, down by $8 billion or so. Is it your intention to really reinvest that in securities or to reduce the funding cost side of the balance sheet if you had to sort of choose one way or the other?
Yeah. You know, it's a good challenge for us, and I'm not sure the answer is binary either. And we'll look at basically the trade-offs, and the trade-offs typically are many. One would be from the standpoint of freeing up capital, how best to deploy it back into the firm so it gives us more degrees of freedom. Second is basically growth and profitability. Finally, from a broader-based strategic standpoint, what are the best options for this particular company? But you know, the trend has been, from a factual standpoint, as we freed up the cash, or freed up basically the liabilities from the asset as $1 billion a quarter is rolled off, we have reinvested in largely agency securities. I mean, that has been the strategy up through now. Doesn't mean that we'll sustain it in its absolute form, but I would say though that that'll still be a very important part of what we do.
Right. Okay, so it's sort of like quarter by quarter you think about how the strategy plays out.
I think that we're going to have a more comprehensive view. But I'm just saying, if you look at basically recent history, that's what the strategy has dictated and what the company has executed against.
Right. Okay. And this question may be a little premature, but as you return to more sustained profitability and its provisions, eventually will come down pretty significantly. How do you think about the cost structure of the company, let's say 12, 24 months from now, in terms of what kind of things you'd like to spend money on that you haven't been able to spend on in the past? And maybe if you can just touch on maybe four buckets of that, such as number one, incentive compensation, number two, advertising, number three, investments in the franchise, and then number four, in terms of the FDIC assessments coming from REREG, are you impacted by any kind of assessment change in assessment calculation change in that regard?
How many questions?
I'm sorry, that was I guess basically just touch on maybe this. I guess I'm looking for incentive comp, obviously advertising. As you become much more profitable, to what degree do you feel you have freedom to really invest much more in the franchise?
Let me take a shot at it. One on several fronts. As the overall profitability and health of the company, continues to improve. As we said, I think both in the release and in our commentary, it gives us many more degrees of freedom to pursue the opportunities that we think are best suited for the company. And they probably will fall into several categories. We would like to intelligently enhance our marketing spend, where it makes sense. And there's a whole host of ways to do it. Some actually cost money, some basically cost really kind of time and resources more than explicitly money. So I'll just give you some examples. As we speak, we're working on basically kind of new prospect home pages. We're working on basically reorienting our advertising. You'll probably see more of that coming into the late third, into the fourth quarter, more aggressive acquisition offers. Actually, importantly, where it's not so much spend, but more of segmentation, analytic, a lot of testing and learning, that we have approximately 15 million prospects that come to our website annually. We have a reasonably good conversion rate measured by industry standards, but there's an immense opportunity, we believe, to do better. And in addition to that, we have a large number of customers who come to us who open accounts but never fund, and we think we have a large opportunity to do better, and that's through being smarter about the touch points and the throughputs and basically how we can bring them from, hollow accounts to more productive accounts. In addition to that, which really was started in the latter part of 2009, we started to bring more relational service and relational salespeople into the company. And again, our costs are coming down as we're basically putting on a higher caliber person to interface with our customer base, and we'll continue to invest in that because the payback model looks reasonably good. In addition to that, and a bit more tactical, working on things like portfolio margining, three- and four-legged spreads, working on basically leveraging what I would say are more common aspects, particularly in the online segment today, like communities. We can go on and on and on and on. So we have a lot of opportunity ahead of us. The question is prioritization and then how we fund it without bloating a cost base. So in a perfect world, we'll be smarter and we'll be leaner and more productive. And it is a bit premature, but that's sort of the direction we're taking the company.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic color. And so I guess you sort of balance the cost of that versus sort of the operating margins that you're showing.
That's correct. That's correct. And each one basically will be measured where it's appropriate as kind of an independent event and has to basically stand on its own viability from the standpoint of not only the P&L but the returns this company will realize.
Right. And then on a full year basis, does the incentive comp structure change dramatically if you show, say, profitability on a full year basis?
I would say there's a correlation. But it's not the traditional wirehouse or investment bank, and so that the correlation is going to be relatively mild.
Right. Okay. And then just lastly on the share count, so we're at 290. Is that a good run rate for the third quarter? And then if you convert, I think the conversion is already in the share count. Is that correct?
That's correct. 290 is a good number, and
290 is a fully converted number.
Right. And the reason why that's appropriate is when we shifted from a loss to a gain, you move from the basic shares to the fully diluted. So 290 is the assumption, assuming that we continue to be profitable. And if it were still a loss that you assume, then you would use the lower 220 number.
Your next question comes from Faye Elliott of Bank of America.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It appears just from the guidance that some of the operating trends, moved more positive toward the end of the quarter and maybe could be reflected next quarter in stronger, sustainable operating numbers. And I guess to that end, are you seeing higher prepays given the rate environment toward the end of the quarter? And has your outlook for loan runoff shifted based on that?
It's Paul Brando. We really haven't seen much of a change in the prepayment rates recently. The current levels are what we reflect in our current provision and in our allowance.
Okay. And you don't expect that to increase at all? You don't expect runoff to increase, just based on rate levels currently?
We haven't seen it, and unless we see a change in behavior, we're not planning on it.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Your next question comes from Joel Jeffrey of KBW.
Hey, thanks, guys. Most of my questions have been asked and answered, but just a couple of housekeeping questions. I know you'd said that DARTs volumes were pretty good in the quarter. Can you give us a percentage of what the options were in that category?
They were 16%, if I recall. Yeah, 16%.
Okay, great. And then in terms of the margin balances, some of your competitors have said that there tends to be a lag effect, and I know with the equities markets being up in the past few quarters and then declining recently, is there a chance that we see the balances come back down in future quarters?
There's certainly a chance, I think that in general, margin balances would tend to grow if the market is viewed as an attractive place for them to buy more securities. So I think it's going to be a function of where the market goes to some degree.
Okay, great. And then just lastly, in terms of deposits, I know you guys had a sale of deposits in a past quarter. Are you guys still actively looking to sell deposits?
No, we're not.
Okay. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from Lee Cooperman of Omega Advisors.
Yeah, actually my question was asked, but I'll electioneer for my question. Going on this theory that a penny saved is a penny earned, we have a big negative spread on our outstanding debt versus we're earning our cash. We're generating cash. We're building cash at the holding company. I know it requires regulator approval, but I would encourage you to look for that regulator approval to take out some of this debt to improve our net interest margin, so to speak.
It's clearly on our radar.
You answered the question. I just wanted to electioneer for it. That's all. But thank you. Great job, by the way. Great job. Good call. Good responses. Thank you.
Great.
This concludes the question and answer session of today's call. I will now turn the floor back over to Mr. Stephen Freiberg for any closing remarks.
Thank you, operator, and thank you for joining us tonight. This was an important quarter for E-Trade as we continue to make substantial progress towards sustainable growth and profitability. We look forward to speaking with you again next quarter. Good evening.
Thank you. This concludes your conference. You may now disconnect.